And of course, Linda Moulton Howe will continue her incredible probing of this story with John Podesta. Just amazing. And again, last hour, we call it Conversations with Linda. That's when we take your phone call. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, let's let you complete this story here.
Well, given this 2016 presidential campaign with UFOs being brought up with Hillary Clinton, it's important to understand the background of Hillary's interest in UFOs before now. And we have to go to Lawrence Rockefeller. He is or was a brother in the family of David and Nelson Rockefeller. He invited a dozen of us investigating UFOs to his JY Ranch in Jackson Hole, Wyoming on September 14 to 15, 1993. He called it a UFO roundtable. By then, Bill Clinton had been U.S. president for 9 months. The group of us had been invited to talk candidly with Mr. Rockefeller about our various research efforts ranging from animal mutilations, human abductions, crop formations, telepathy, ESP, to government and military policies of lies and denial about the alien presence interacting with Earth. What we did not know was that Lawrence Rockefeller, with the help of retired Naval Intelligence Officer C.B. Scott Jones, had prepared an ad to be placed in the New York Times, Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, and a few other major newspapers, calling for the new President Clinton to tell the American public the truth about the UFO phenomena. This was Lawrence Rockefeller's velvet glove threat behind the pressures that he was putting on newly elected President Clinton to open up the government's UFO files to the public. Mr. Rockefeller knew that then Chief of Staff John Podesta was a big supporter of disclosing the truth about UFOs, and he knew that Bill and Hillary Clinton wanted to know more as well. 2 years went by after that gathering of us researchers without Lawrence Rockefeller's ad appearing nationwide in major newspapers, perhaps because President Clinton seemed to be trying in his own way to go around the classified blocks of intelligence agencies with that declassification of 800 million pages. But nothing in UFOs came out. Well, by the August 1995, it appears that Hillary Clinton did sit down alone with Lawrence Rockefeller to talk about UFO ET disclosure when the Clintons vacationed at the Rockefeller Ranch in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Apparently, President Clinton did not participate because his science advisor, John Gibbons, wrote in a memo that Lawrence Rockefeller, quote, will want to talk with you about his interest in ESP, paranormal phenomena, and UFOs. Rockefeller sought from me the administration's help in declassifying the information and making the whole matter public and open. But I've made no secret about my conviction that we must not be too diverted from more earthly imperatives, close quote. That was John Gibbons' letter to Bill Clinton. But during that August 1995 vacation of the Clintons with Lawrence Rockefeller at the Wyoming ranch, Hillary was photographed carrying the newly published book, quote, Are We Alone? Philosophical Implications of the Discovery of Extraterrestrial Life by theoretical physicist and astrobiologist Paul Davies. Whatever happened in conversations between Rockefeller and Hillary Clinton, the Clinton administration did not break open revelations about UFOs and ETs. In 2000, Grant Cameron filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the U.S. President's Office of Science and Technology Policy for correspondence between Lawrence Rockefeller and President Bill Clinton's science advisor and Hillary Clinton and her husband, President Bill Clinton. Grant received back nearly 1,000 pages of material. Here again from Winnipeg, Canada, is Grant Cameron.
The key thing with what we call the Rockefeller Initiative documents is it's 1,000 pages of totally unsanitized material. There's nothing pulled out of it at all. We later found out a lot of material was missing from the file. The two briefings that were given to the science advisor were both missing. But in terms of material, nothing was blacked out. So what you have is a correspondence between Lawrence Rockefeller on one side and the Clinton administration on the other side. And these letters and documents are going back and forth.
Of those 1,000 pages that you got, what is the single most important from your point of view?
Two are the Hillary Clinton documents that show that Hillary Clinton helped edit a letter to her husband, the President of the United States. And this was a letter that Lawrence Rockefeller had been drafting from 1993 to 1996 on open disclosure of the extraterrestrial phenomena. Whenever he didn't get his way, he would say to them, okay, I think it's time to send this letter to the president. And they would say, no, hang on. We don't know if the letter was ever sent, but we know for a fact, based upon one document, that Hillary Clinton helped Lawrence Rockefeller edit this letter to the president on UFO disclosure.
Hillary Clinton today in January 2016 is now running for president. What was the letter like that she helped draft?
That there's extraterrestrials visiting the Earth, and that there's significant evidence, and that the president should not go his own way on this, and that this should be made public. The president in 1995, with the help of John Podesta, was doing an executive order where they were going to try to force out all the classified material. So what Rockefeller's letter indicated was that as a part of this executive order should be to release the UFO documents. That was the one document where Hillary was helping edit. And the other one was even more significant, and that is that people don't realize the power that Hillary Clinton had in the Clinton White House. She'd taken the press secretary's office.
In the West Wing.
Yeah, so she was very powerful. And the second document indicates that Lawrence Rockefeller is writing to the science advisor. The letter indicates that everything going from Rockefeller to the science advisor and from the science advisor back to Rockefeller was being put through the First Lady's office. Hillary was a key part of the Rockefeller initiative. She knew exactly what was going on with these documents going back and forth. And the third most significant document is a document which is a memo from Jack Gibbons, who's the science advisor to President Clinton, in 1995, which is written to the president, which basically warns him that Lawrence Rockefeller wants to talk about extrasensory perception and UFOs and other such phenomena when he visits the Rockefeller Ranch in August of 1995. We tried to accommodate Mr. Rockefeller and do what he asked. They had tried to deal with it at his level, but that Rockefeller now was going to go to the president, and there was nothing they could really do, that they had done what they could to answer Rockefeller's questions. And he was basically warning the president that Rockefeller, when you go to his ranch, he wants to talk UFOs, and he's going to bring up the subject.
If Lawrence Rockefeller and all that that means in terms of power and wealth and influence in the United States began in the late 80s to the early 90s trying to leverage open the truth about UFOs, ETs, and interactions with this planet, why would Lawrence Rockefeller have ever hesitated in using that leverage and going directly to Bill Clinton after he became president?
I think it's just that he was going through the protocol, and that's where he would threaten this letter that said, you know, I'm not getting what I want, or where he threatens to put a major full-page ad in major newspapers in the United States exposing the fact that he is demanding UFO disclosure and demanding that President Clinton disclose. So he was using this, but he was going through protocol that he had to go through the science advisor's office first, and that's where what I was told in 1995, when Bill Clinton and Hillary go to the ranch, that's when he brought up UFOs, because Bill Clinton was away from Washington. He was away from the CIA and all the people that were sort of blocking this effort. And then he could talk to him in private, because now you're on Lawrence Rockefeller's turf. But he's going through the protocol. He doesn't just bypass. And this is how the whole story starts, is I'm in a meeting with Bud Hopkins and John Mack. Bud Hopkins is telling the story that they were at Rockefeller's house. This is before the election took place. Rockefeller came to both of them and said, I'm going to the president, and whether Ross Perot wins or George Bush wins or Bill Clinton wins, whoever wins, I'm going to the president and I'm going to get UFO disclosure. Bud Hopkins told me that he had told Rockefeller, well, Mr. Rockefeller, I don't think that's how it works. And he said, no, I'm going to the president. I'm going to get this thing declassified. And so I guess when he finally went, he went through the standard protocol of sending a letter, and they dealt with him at the lowest level they could. But he's a very powerful guy, so it was not like they could just sort of slough him off, which they did try to do until he ran this thing where he was going to send the letter directly to the president, make this public, and he was going to put this ad in the newspaper. So they tried everything they could, and they did a lot of material that people don't realize to accommodate Lawrence Rockefeller with the threats he was making to go to the president.
I have in front of me the transcript of what it was that Lawrence Rockefeller in 1993 was holding the threat that if he could not get this direct communication with new President Bill Clinton, that he was going to place in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, the Los Angeles Times, and other major newspapers, this in words, quote, "Mr. President," meaning Bill Clinton, "on the subject of UFO phenomena, what do you know? When did you learn it? Have you shared it with Congress? When will you talk to the American people about it? The subject is as important as any we will ever face. Don't try to go it alone. This information belongs to the world," close quote, Lawrence Rockefeller.
It's very powerful. And my impression after reading all the documents was it scared the living daylights out of people in the White House to try to stop him from doing this. And that's where he was able to make particularly the Roswell demand, where they said to him, if you say the cover-up is as deep as it is and as wide as it is, there's no chance we're ever going to declassify this stuff. Give us one case, we'll declassify that, and then we'll go after the rest of all the stuff that you're claiming is there. And it was at that point that Lawrence Rockefeller said, okay, I want you to investigate the Roswell case. And that is why I maintain that in 1993, the U.S. Air Force went out and reinvestigated Roswell. It was because it was greenlighted by Rockefeller and the president that they had to go and reinvestigate it. So the Air Force secretary sends them out and they reinvestigate Roswell. And they come out in 1994 with a preliminary report and 1995 with the final report, which says the documents are missing, but there's no cover up here. There was no extraterrestrial flying saucer. It was this mogul balloon. So that report comes, and then you can see if you read between the lines what's actually happening is in November of 1995, Bill Clinton gets the final report that says, no, this is a mogul balloon, there's no cover-up. And I believe Clinton knows what's going on, but he wants the Air Force to make this public. Rather than him making it public, get the Air Force to admit that this is for real. So what happens is in November of 1995, Bill Clinton goes to Belfast, Northern Ireland. And what they do is they have a letter writing competition, and the two kids that won the letter writing competition, one of them was on the stage with Bill Clinton, but he doesn't read that girl's letter. He reads a letter from Ryan, and this is a document that I've tried to find. It's not in the Clinton library. It doesn't seem to exist anywhere. And he makes this famous statement, "Ryan, if you're out in the audience tonight, here's the answer to your question. No, as far as I know, the flying saucer did not crash in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. But Ryan, if the U.S. Air Force did recover bodies, they didn't tell me about it either, and I want to know." What that means is Bill Clinton sees the final report on Roswell in 1995 about the mogul balloon, but the first Roswell report doesn't talk about the bodies. So Bill Clinton indirectly makes this speech, and he's warning the Air Force. He's saying, okay, you sent me the report, I saw it, now explain the bodies. You didn't talk about the bodies. And that's why in 1997, the U.S. Air Force reinvestigates Roswell for a second time. It was because Bill Clinton had made this threat in this 1995 speech, explain the bodies. And that's where they come up with the crash test dummies story about 1953 dropping dummies that were 6 feet tall and that had broken legs off and broken fingers, and people would see four fingers and thought it was little four-foot gray aliens. And that's when Bill Clinton had to push to get the Roswell story out, is because they had closed all the doors. They had said, okay, Mr. President, here's the answer to your question in 1995 about the bodies. It was these crash test dummies. And nobody believed it, but Bill Clinton had to sort of drop it at that point.
There were no wooden dummies dropped in 1947.
Exactly. One of the people ties into now is Marie Dowd from the New York Times. Writes an article and talks about this absolutely stupid explanation. And the article was called "We're Not Alone." And she talks about this stupid thing and how anybody could possibly believe this. What happens is later on this year, when John Podesta comes out and says, I tried to get UFOs declassified, still couldn't do it, and my biggest disappointment in 2014 was not getting UFOs declassified, he copies Dowd on this famous tweet.
Maureen Dowd had brought up her own perspective that we're not alone in the universe back in 97, and then John Podesta is writing her in 2015 because the whole subject that he's been trying for a long time with the Clintons to open up, he now has sent Maureen Dowd a tweet about opening up UFOs with Hillary Clinton.
Yes, if you watch what he's doing, you see a very smart guy, very powerful guy, manipulating things behind the scenes.
And George, I found the New York Times, the original June 25th, 1997, We're Not Alone opinion piece by Maureen Dowd. And it is worth sharing tonight because she is so smart. And she, like anybody looking at that report that came out in 95 saying that these were 6-foot-tall wooden dummies, and then all of us finding out there was no such thing dropped in 1947. She starts out in her We're Not Alone column, June 26, 1997, quote, talk about your wacky military optimism. Just in time for Independence Day and the big UFO bash in Roswell, the Air Force has finally coughed up an explanation of what happened in the New Mexico desert that caused untold numbers of Americans to believe that the military covered up a 1947 spaceship crash. The Air Force put an alien on the cover of its Roswell report and stamped it, case closed. Klaatu Barada Nikto, or as we say in our galaxy, get a grip. The Roswell report will settle the debate over aliens about as well as the Warren report settled the debate over the single bullet theory, meaning the JFK assassination. Yeah. And what she does in her column, of course, is say this is an insult to the intelligence of people to have done those two reports. And today, in 2016, maybe things are finally cracking and moving, that we're not going to get wooden dummies thrown in our faces anymore, that we're going to get some truth broken open. And in the next half hour is a fascinating insight from Grant about the experiencers that are this huge other piece of this puzzle that are completely independent of government policies of denial.
And those are the abduction syndrome cases, aren't they?
That's right.
All right, we're going to be back with Linda. And Linda, in terms of getting information that you continue to seek out, Earthfiles at earthfiles.com?
Correct. Thank you very much. I love to hear from people. Earthfiles at earthfiles.com. Always think of a reporter who files news about the Earth.
All right, when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, Linda has another segment, incredible series of reports tonight, Linda, by the way. And the next hour, we'll open up the phone lines, conversations with Linda, questions, stories. Perhaps you're a whistleblower. You've got some inside information. You want to share that with us as well. We will do that and take that. Also, don't forget, I will be with Linda and a group of other people, including our dear friend Stanton Friedman, Jimmy Church, and so many other people at the special Alien Snowfest in Big Bear Lake, California. Full details at coasttocoastam.com. Oh, welcome back. Linda Moulton Howe with us, and this is her final report before we go to her questions next hour. Linda, I'll let you take it away.
Thanks, George.
Sure.
Well, there was a Roper survey for the Bigelow Holding Company in Las Vegas, Nevada, and it was conducted between July and September of 1991. The survey asked nearly 6,000 adult Americans questions about, quote, unusual personal experiences that concern the relation between the experiencers and what can be called the UFO abduction syndrome. the incidence of abduction experiences appears to be on the order of at least 2% of the adult population, close quote. In 2014, the adult U.S. population older than 18 totaled about 245 million people. 2% of that is 4,900,000 that would be in this possible category of being an abductee. Some researchers consider the abductions of humans by non-humans from bedrooms and cars and other sites to be an evil act. But the abductees or experiencers themselves are often not clear about motives. Missing time for which they have no memories confuses and scares them. Some describe having their sperm or eggs extracted or introduced to babies or little children described as their hybrid offspring. Some are taught alien languages. Some are shown three-dimensional images resembling holograms of the Earth and star systems, often with warnings about nuclear war, sky fires, or great floods that will overwhelm Earth, that humans are running out of time to change their destructive ways on this planet. Some abductees like the aliens, some do not. But abductees agree that something else not human is present in their lives, whether the rest of humanity knows the truth that we're not alone in this universe, and an alien presence interacts with and manipulates Earth. Here now, continuing, is Grant Cameron.
Sure as I am about anything, the aliens are running the show. The government is just an observer like you and I. They may know a little bit more than you and I, but basically when you start talking to experiencers and you talk to them about flying the craft, and there's a couple of them have very detailed explanations of how you fly the craft, this is not some little engine you pull out and it's free energy type stuff. This is very complex. It's got to do with consciousness. It is way beyond anything we have. And that's the kind of thing where if you're the president, this would keep you up at night trying to figure out how do you deal with this. A lot of the experiencers will tell you that you'll have a gray alien and it'll suddenly turn to a ball of light. And so you start looking at the situation, are they actually aliens? Or is this some sort of spiritual type phenomena? Because you get the thing with the balls of light, and if the gray can turn to a ball of light, is it really an alien or is it a ball of light that can turn into a physical being? And from what I've learned from the experiencers, it's just so far beyond everything we've got in our technology. The energy will make nuclear weapons look like matchsticks, and the consciousness aspect of it is just so far removed. And then you get into the whole aspect of the UFO case. And I always refer to the Moody Blues. The Moody Blues were abducted, and they talk about this story, and they remember before they were born that they were coming into this world and what they were going to do, and they were going to be musicians, and they talk about this. And that's where I say, if you get one single case that goes back before birth, then suddenly you have this really complex thing. I mean, it's not just this life, it's numerous lives. You may have like MJ-12 level people who understand that kind of aspect, but the average guy, maybe even the president, doesn't know all that kind of stuff. That's very sophisticated, which has been confirmed. 1950, Wilbur Smith, the Canadian government, went to the Americans, and they asked the Americans, what's the deal with flying saucers? And they're told, it's the most highly classified subject, and this is American officials, flying saucers exist. Vannevar Bush is running this group. It's of tremendous significance to the Americans. And then the key thing, we were also told by American officials that other things might be associated with the flying saucers, such as mental phenomena. So in 1950, they knew there was mental phenomena, that you fly the craft with your mind, because they picked up a live alien at Roswell. And as Cat Stevens, abducting, in his song, talks about being on the ship, they fly it with their mind. And so in 1950, they already knew that. They had a live alien that was talking in their heads. They had captured Roswell. They knew there was this mental aspect that they really can't get at. And Dr. Eric Walker, when we interviewed him, we asked him, what about MJ-12? And that's when he said, let me ask you a question. What do you know about ESP? And the guy that was interviewing him from Great Britain didn't have an answer. And he said, look, unless you understand about ESP and how it works, you will not be taken in to MJ-12. Very few people understand how it works. And then, of course, Jan Hartson's famous question to Ben Rich, who runs Lockheed Skunk Works, and he says, how does it work, Ben? How does the propulsion system work? And Ben turns around in 1993 and says, what do you know about ESP? Then he said, everything in time and space is connected. And he said, that's how it works. There is no time. There is no space. It's everything's connected. It's just so complex. It's so beyond what we understand in this physical world that it would blow people away with the complexity. And only at the, I think at the MJ-12 level and a couple of people maybe working on this high level NSA stuff understand this whole aspect. It's not a nuts and bolts type thing. It's a very, very complex phenomena. One of the main things that the aliens will talk about, number one message, is oneness, about this fact that everything is connected and that whatever you do to somebody else, you do to yourself. And in order for them to get here, as comes to this thing about people using mental phenomena to fly the ship, that's how they get here. My personal impression, they do not fly through time and space. They're using this entangled particle principle, where if you can flip from one place to another to the universe, you can move through time and space. But you have to understand that everything is one. And that's what Ben Rich said. What do you know about ESP? And everything is one. And you can move around because everything's connected.
This raises the issue of resonant frequencies, that the key to the cosmos in other dimensions, parallel universes, everything in this universe, is that you would have to have addresses, but they would be frequencies, a mathematical language that you could resonate between 12 billion light years from Earth, understanding entanglement. And resonant frequency must be the way that you could move point to point.
Yeah, that everything is a frequency. When you break it down, there is no physical universe. It's all frequency, it's all vibration, and that the location is just part of the equation. The aliens will tell numerous experiencers that whatever you do to someone else, you do to yourself, and whatever you do to the planet, you're destroying the planet, that everybody's connected, and it's one big planet, it's one big vibration, and when you put a bad vibration in there, you're affecting the entire planet. And I'm sure when they recovered the live alien in Roswell, New Mexico, and this thing was talking in their heads, they just went, wow. And that's what it's all about. And that's why I think we have to talk to the experiencers, because they're getting the messages from the aliens, and you've got 41% of them are getting downloads. These downloads, they're being taught to fly flying saucers. They're downloading mathematical, scientific material in people's heads. And you've got to wonder, are they here to eat us, or are they here to teach us stuff and to warn us?
If this planet is an extraterrestrial experiment, and that it has been an experiment for millions of years, and we just happen to be the latest model with consciousness on the Earth, then if the machinery of the universe is the recycling of souls in and out of containers called reincarnation, trying to grow those souls and evolve them, then wouldn't the challenge to humanity have always been, when will you tell the truth?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that if everybody is hiding behind, it is too complicated to open it up, then it's a perpetuation of weakness.
Yeah. John Podesta says it. He says it in his speeches. He uses the same line that Jimmy Carter used. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. Make it public. And that's where John Podesta seems to be rolling the dice. He's saying, this is the law. That's what he said in the 2002 sci-fi thing. We should do it because this is the law. And you and I have learned a lot from sort of the bad elements of the UFO phenomenon. We've learned different things, and I think it's become positive for us. The same as the experiences when they first get abducted, they think it's the end of the world. Same sort of thing that all experiences have. There's this sort of a time thing. We're running out of time. Something's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen. But they're preparing us for this sort of thing. It's that same sort of message.
So why is it that the advanced intelligence or intelligences that are manipulating Earth and humans don't just open it all up themselves by making it clear what the truth is?
Because it's non-intervention. What the Canadian government was told, Wilbur Smith had stated, the only time they would ever interfere is if there was a nuclear war, and that they could stop a nuclear war, and that they could prove they could stop a nuclear war, they could take the moon and split it in half and put it back together in front of the entire world to prove that they could stop a nuclear war. But other than that, they were going to allow us to stew in our own juices. Non-intervention, we have to learn our own lessons. Life is not about whether you win, like we get disclosure and the sun's going to come out and everybody's going to be happy and all the poor people are going to get fed. Everything is a lesson in the world. And so they're not here. People always confuse aliens with Santa Claus. They're not here to bring us toys and free energy. They're alarm clocks. They're giving us a warning because we detonated an atomic bomb in 1945.
if there are non-humans that are very advanced, that are manipulating and monitoring this, they could stop any problem here. So what is the urgency, the time running out about?
To stop global warming is one of the key messages. The nuclear weapons used to be the big message, but most experiencers are shown this flood image of cities being overrun by water, which would indicate the global warming, the whole idea that we're polluting the world, and we are in a situation where we can destroy the world. And what they're trying to do is wake up people in these visions that there's going to be this sort of a rapture type event where something's going to be happening, or they say, we're being trained for something, we don't know what it is, and they fight with the aliens, why are you training me for this? So I don't remember any of this. And the aliens always say that when the time is right, you'll know what to do, as if they're being trained for this. They fear that something is about to happen. It's something that they're warning us about, that they're not really going to stop. And some say that it's even too late now. There's nothing we can do to stop it. And it seems to have to do with global warming. It has to do with the pollution that we're doing. If we don't, then you get back to when I do the music thing. When I get back to the song that got me going was Neil Young. He writes a song in 1968 called After the Gold Rush. And Dolly Parton, who's maybe an experiencer, wrote it. And if you look at the lyrics of the song, it says, we're treating the world like a gold rush. And when the gold is gone, it's going to become a ghost town. And the silver seeds, flying saucers, are going to come and they're going to take the chosen, which is what we call the experiencers. They're going to take the chosen ones to another planet. So if we don't learn the lesson here, we destroy the world, we're going to go learn our lesson somewhere else. So the aliens know that. It's not like they're going to come here and save us. They're just here giving us the warnings, and if we don't learn the lesson here, then we'll go through another reincarnation, and we'll go someplace else, and we just keep doing it until we finally learn the lesson. They're just trying to give us the warning while we still have time to turn it around. The aliens are way ahead of us. They're not stupid. They're not doing things by accident. To me, it always comes down to this consciousness thing, where they want you to think. They don't want to give you the answer. If they wanted to give you the answer, they'd come here and tell us what's going on. It's evident they're part of the cover-up. They don't want to tell you what's going on, but they definitely are giving us piles of signals. UFO sightings, shutting down missiles, cattle mutilations, crop circles. They're doing all this stuff because it's got to do with evolution. It's got to do with growing. It's all about learning. If you believe it's all one, Ronald Reagan's famous statement, I often wonder how the world would unite if we were facing a threat from an alien nation, how we would all realize we're one on this planet.
And if you go back to 1950, it is fascinating through the lens of all of this discussion with Grant, who has been doing so much Freedom of Information Act requests and getting so many documents, that in Canada, working in the Department of Transportation was Wilbert Smith that he was talking about. And that on November 20th, 1950, that Wilbert Smith obtained information of a meeting, and it was supposed to be through the Canadian embassy staff, and it was supposed to be information that related to an American physicist, this is 1950 now, Robert Sarbacher, a name that comes up later, but let's just walk through this. So back there, this Canadian engineer, Wilbert Smith, he reads this. It says, I made discreet inquiries through the Canadian embassy staff in Washington who were able to obtain from me the following information. The matter is the most highly classified subject in the United States government, rating higher even than the H-bomb. Flying saucers exist. Their modus operandi is unknown, but concentrated effort is being made by a small group headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush. The entire matter is considered by the United States authorities to be of tremendous significance. And that was related to information coming from a physicist, Robert Sarbacher. Well, now jump 33 years into the future from then, and in 1983, physicist Robert Sarbacher, who by then he is the on his letterhead, he is president and chairman of the board for the Washington Institute of Technology, and he answers a letter from UFO researcher William Steinman. And this is famous, but it is now worth reading and going back through some of these documents that I think are becoming even more important the more we learn coming out of all of this discussion with Grant. So now here is a man who has been exposed between 1950 and 1983, a physicist, Robert Sarbacher, and he gets this inquiry from Bill Steinman about UFOs, and it is a 2.5-page approximately letter, and here's the excerpt that I think is very important, because he's speaking from firsthand physicist information during that critical period of time from 1950 to 1983. Quote, about the only thing I remember at this time is that certain materials, and he's talking about crash retrievals, reported to have come from flying saucer crashes were extremely light and very tough. I am sure our laboratories analyzed them very carefully. There were reports that instruments or people operating these machines were also of very lightweight, sufficient to withstand the tremendous deceleration and acceleration associated with their machinery. I remember in talking with some of these people at the office that I got the impression these, and he puts it in quotation marks, aliens, were constructed like certain insects that we have observed on Earth, wherein because of the low mass, the inertial forces involved in the operation of these instruments would be quite low. I still do not know why the high order of classification has been given and why the denial of the existence of these devices is in place, signed Dr. Robert Sarbacher. So there, I've run into this too.
Sounds like the praying mantises.
Well, it could be praying mantis, or it could be the smaller androids that are the very thin, small grays. And I've run into this before where there are people who have had firsthand, one man that I talked to, I absolutely know he was telling me the truth, and he had a face-to-face with one of the Ebens. And the experience was extraordinary. He had one of the downloads where the beings put pictures like movies running in the human head. They can be superimposed with gold symbols. On top of that, they can be getting telepathic words in their mind. It's really an explosion in the human mind, and it appears to be what happens with the with this particular type of telepathic gray being. And the man said to me, you know, it isn't every human would like to have the experience of going to Starbucks, sitting down over a cup of coffee, and learning about the universe through ETs, the way it was sort of depicted by Steven Spielberg of the little ET that got drunk on the beer in the refrigerator.
If we could only do it that way, huh?
And he said, it's never going to happen that way, because their minds in relationship to our minds are a completely different order. But he said, what I don't understand is why aren't we all on this planet just simply told the truth?
That is the $64,000 question. Up next, Conversations with Linda.